from Hollidaysburg to Danville, Altoona to Jeffersonville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it was, as they say, an unprecedented year. David Taylor and our Capitol Watch crew are here to take a look back at the turbulent year 2020. And elected officials swear an oath to uphold the constitutions of the United States and the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I'll have a town hall commentary on those who are staying true to their oath. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine is now taking place across Pennsylvania. Healthcare workers were the first to receive the inoculations. Now the Center Square reports vaccinations will begin at nursing homes and long-term care facilities this week. Walgreens and CVS are partnering with the Pennsylvania Department of Health in administering the shots in the more than 2,000 such facilities scattered across the state. Nursing home and personal care facility residents have been especially hard hit by the virus, with deaths at those facilities accounting for almost two-thirds of those in the state who have passed away after contracting the disease. The Department of State has certified incumbent state senator Jim Brewster in the closest and last state legislative race to be decided. Brewster has at least temporarily prevailed in retaining his suburban Pittsburgh area seat by a 69-vote margin. However, Republican challenger Nicole Zingarelli is challenging some of the ballots in federal court, and the outcome of those rulings could tip the seat in her favor. That seat aside, Republicans flipped one Pittsburgh area seat, and Democrats flipped a Delaware County seat, thus preserving the GOP majority in the chamber for another 2 years. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. No one could have predicted last year at this time what the year 2020 would hold in store. The COVID-19 global pandemic touched the lives of every American, but state government plodded through the year, mostly trying to rein in the autocratic mandates of Governor Tom Wolf, but also attending to other important legislative matters. David Taylor is here for a Capitol Watch Year in Review. He's joined by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and by Matthew Briette from Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. For this final program of 2020 for our year in review, you've got Matt Briette, CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks for being here.
Hey, good to be with you, David.
And as always, even better, Rebecca Euler, Legislative
Indeed.
Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca,
no
thanks for being
taken,
here.
No offense taken, David. I have
David.
To agree.
Happy to be back here for our year in review.
Oh, and it's just like, you know, I hope everybody's enjoying the holiday season. And, you know, we're here we are ready to turn the corner. And, you know, you feel like a rat in a maze, like there should be a piece of cheese at the end. It's like, congratulations, you made it. you know, and it's stunning. You look back to the beginning of the year, and it's like the old saying, you know, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. That I went back and looked, and at Groundhog Day in early February, that Governor Wolf and his budget proposal, that he was looking to defund cyber charter schools, and that he was looking to impose a new additional tax on natural gas production, with the excuse this time being to build out Pennsylvania infrastructure. Obviously, neither of those things came to pass.
Not only did they not come to pass, but it became very clear that maybe cyber schooling was going to have to become our future. And of course, a lot of cyber schools offered their help. The traditional public schools rejected it. But here we are today that most kids across Pennsylvania are having to cyber school, even if it's inadequate and unfortunately not doing the job for many kids.
Well, and it's funny, you know, much like former New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg, when he ran for president, said about how easy farming is, that you just like put the seed in the ground and it grows and that's all there is to it, that all of the conventional physical public schools love to pretend that online learning was like this really easy thing that anybody could do. Of course, the pandemic and the school closures and whatnot then forced them to compete in that space, and they realized, oh my goodness, there are technical and logistical and connectivity issues, and you've got to structure the curriculum. And so a lot of Pennsylvania parents, for starting in the fall, have chosen to enroll their kids at an online school that specializes in this, that spent years building up the capacity to do this well.
It's a bit of sweet justice, because the traditional public schools have said, wait, you know, online learning doesn't cost as much, so we need to defund them or reduce. And Governor Wolf was doing that very thing. And then as the traditional public schools were having to go to cyber education, say, we need more money. So it's clear that either they don't know what they're talking about, or they hate competition, or both. And I think that it is probably a bit of both. But here we are today that unfortunately, a lot of kids are falling behind because of the inability for the school system to adapt.
And the thing also is, of course, Matt, that not online learning isn't right for every kid.
Correct.
This is why we need to have a menu of choices for students and their families so that we can connect kids with the method of instruction that works best for them.
Yeah, this year has certainly been an education, to say the least. But to sort of take a bigger picture, rewinding back, like you said, to February when the governor gave his budget address, from a big picture standpoint, the economy was booming. It was a great time. Business optimism was high. Wages were rising. The biggest problem that businesses were having then was finding enough employees to do all the work they had.
Yes.
Thinking back to that. And things have sure changed since then. When I sat down to think about this year, I kind of put it into I see us as having three interconnected crises this year. And the first one, of course, is the virus, which we've had to deal with and which has impacted the people and our healthcare system, obviously, drastically. But the second crisis, I think, is the political reaction that we've had to the virus, the business closures, the beginning of which the courts have found unconstitutional, that the Governor Wolf's administration put into effect, and then the unemployment that resulted from that and all the cascading impacts of those decisions that were made early in the crisis and ongoing. But then the third crisis, I think, which we've talked about on this show several times, is the constitutional crisis.
Yes.
That has come about because of the abuse of executive authority in the state and you know, in other states as well. But we've been talking about it in this state. And that is still – all of those crises are still an issue, and we're going to have to deal with them all next year. So I kind of wanted to put a framework around things, because I think a lot of the issues that we're discussing fit into one of those buckets.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, Rebecca. And you know, and thank you for that, because you know, this whole year has been a stumbling forward process of, you know, something happens and trying to respond to it. And again, to get back to one of the foundational things that's gone wrong is that you have had the Wolf administration continue to just hurl down thunderbolts from on high without talking with anyone,
right,
without interacting with the stakeholders. To not only to get their opinions, which would be nice if somebody asked, but even just to determine from the people who would know, how would this particular policy play out in the real world if we enacted it? And that just has not happened. It's still not happening.
Still not, right.
Well, I mean, and I think this has exposed a lot of weaknesses and a lot of things that are going to have to be addressed. I mean, the one in particular that we all know has allowed for this abuse of power is the ability that the Supreme Court unfortunately has anointed, and that is Governor Wolf's declarations of disaster that have given him unchecked power.
Yeah.
Really, it would be easier to impeach him
yes.
and remove him than to actually hold him
And to interject on that, just to put a thought in there and to remember that the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania ruled against the actual black and white letter of the law that the governor shall, the law says,
yes.
the governor shall, upon the passage of a concurrent resolution by the House and Senate, the governor shall rescind the emergency declaration. And as you said, the Supreme Court ruled that shall doesn't mean shall, that instead that the governor gets to veto and only a legislative supermajority can ever bring an end to a disaster declaration. And so the corruption of the courts and the shamelessness of the governor, that's what's put us in this situation.
Well, it's been this ongoing disaster declarations of 90 days that he continues to extend and extend, which he could, do this through the rest of his 20 some odd months that he's got left in office, which, of course, is not the intention of our framers of our government that has checks and balances and expected collaboration between the various branches. But Governor Wolf has been a go-it-alone governor, and I think he really, really likes it that way. He
yeah.
likes that he doesn't have to deal with legislative leaders from the other party and that he can thunderbolts from the sky do things that he would not be able to do otherwise without this disaster declaration. I think, and it is important that we look back. I mean, this was legislation enacted in the 70s, following the TMI, Three Mile Island disaster, and said, well, we need to have a strong executive. Well, I think we've recognized that we've given him way too much power and a Supreme Court that has been willing to bend what the law actually says, as you noted, David. This is going to have to be some cleanup after Governor Wolf finally leaves in January of 2023. Until then, we're going to have to deal with someone who is, frankly, drunk on the power that he's acquired.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Matt Briett from Commonwealth Partners and Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania.
Well, the Supreme Court has put us in the situation where the only remedy to this emergency powers that the governor has is a amendment to the state constitution. So amendments to the Pennsylvania Constitution have to pass two consecutive sessions of the General Assembly, and then they appear on the ballot for voters to vote on. So we have had one amendment that limits the governor's executive authorities to 21 days without and it can't be renewed without legislative authority. So that amendment passed the General Assembly this fall, and it needs to pass again next year, as early as we can get it there in 2021. And then it will appear on the ballot in the primary election for voters to vote on. So I really hope that will move forward expeditiously, because that's the only thing that's going to stop this abuse of power, at least from the perspective of the emergency declaration.
Right. He put forward this scheme to impose a carbon tax on Pennsylvania's electricity generation, the so-called Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and that he has, asserted that he has the authority to do this unilaterally without legislative approval. In fact, the legislature passed a law saying that you have to include us, and then he went and vetoed it, again putting us in the same situation. Like, if you don't have a supermajority to override me, I'm going to do anything that you can't stop me from doing. But he's playing with fire with that, not only how damaging it would be for our economy and our long-term growth and for the people who work in those power plants. Who in the Pennsylvania's coal-fired power plants, those are union jobs. And so he has earned the wrath of the Boilermakers and the IBEW and even the United Mine Workers, because of course their jobs depend upon the supply that comes from the mines in southwestern PA for those power plants in the Laurel Highlands. And so, one of the most notable things about 2020 that I've seen is the emergence of this new pro-production coalition between the employer community and the industrial unions and the skilled trades. You saw the same coalition in place with what had been House Bill 1100, a new manufacturing tax credit for the value chain from methane, from natural gas, and that this passed, Governor Wolf vetoed it, and that the same coalition of hard hat workers and the business community and their legislative allies coming together to insist that we need this and it must get done, and we made the governor relent. And so I think this is an interesting sign of what Pennsylvania's political future might look like if you have if we're able to continue to build on that consensus that we want the industrial activity, we want the jobs and the wages and the benefits and the pensions and the stronger tax base. We want the prosperity that can come from Pennsylvania's industry and especially from our energy sector.
Well, I think, David, what you've outlined is how policy is driving political realignment of where you used to see a lot of the same folks that are pushing back against the governor and these Democratic policies used to be the core of the Democratic Party
base.
Yes,
sir. These were Governor Casey's people.
That's right. So whether you're talking about in western Pennsylvania or northeastern Pennsylvania, you're definitely seeing a political realignment. And that, of course, Donald Trump had tapped into that. But I think this transcends that, David, because you got a lot of people whose jobs, whose livelihoods depend on Pennsylvania's natural resources. And while Governor Wolf wants to crush those things, and we've even seen that at the national level, while there was an effort to try to backtrack what Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were pushing with regard to bans on fracking and moving away from all fossil fuels. The reality is that that's a big part of Pennsylvania's economy. It's a big part of our history, our way of life. And you are seeing some political realignments that I think are going to stick and continue to move forward.
Another way that the governor has imposed himself in the economy and in the the life of our people is not just the way that he's handled the pandemic, but that this happened just recently, sort of towards the end of the year. His veto. Well, first of all, his failure to provide protections from frivolous lawsuits for people who were coping with the pandemic, and that we've been begging for this since March. Yeah. I mean, literally since March, to ask for these protections, which have been adopted in other states. It's fallen on deaf ears. We have the legislature to act. When they finally passed it, he vetoed it.
And that's an executive action we would have supported.
Correct.
But he unfortunately did not take up that task. So, yes, that liability bill, which passed with bipartisan support, there was a recognition that in order to get our businesses back and our economy back humming again, we needed to provide some liability protection for our businesses and nonprofits that were working under the most difficult circumstances to do the best they could.
So long as they were abiding by the protocols from the Center for Disease Control at the federal level and the State Department of Health for those entities, whether they're businesses or schools or healthcare facilities, so long as you're doing all the stuff with the distancing and the masks and the sanitizing workstations and the plexiglass, if you're doing those things and can prove that you're doing them, then there should be a presumption that no, somebody didn't happen to get, if they got sick, they didn't happen to get sick.
Yeah,
there.
Far from protecting bad actors. This is saying good actors should be protected, that they've done everything to mitigate this.
Correct.
Yet he says, nope, sorry, we're going to throw you to the trial lawyers.
And that's what's so ironic about this, is it would only have protected businesses that were following the governor's orders to the best of their ability. So actually signing that would have reinforced his own,
incentivized
safety orders and incentivized them. Right. So there's an example of an executive action that was missed. And where he wants to push executive actions that are harmful in many ways, this one would have been very helpful.
And again, just to reinforce, and I know the listeners have heard me say this before, but the legislation was supported not just by the business community or the healthcare community, although it was also supported by preschools, by the institutions of higher learning, the independent colleges and universities,
hospitals.
by the hospitals, the nursing homes, the Farm Bureau.
It'd be easier to say, David, who didn't support it.
Yes, it's supported by everybody except
The trial lawyers.
Correct. Pennsylvania's litigation industry. And so going into 2021, we have more lawsuits to look forward to. So happy new year. you know, what are other things that you folks can think of looking back on the year that was?
Well, I think the biggest thing, David, that's going to be ongoing, even after we see the vaccine and hopefully this really die out, is that the fiscal state of affairs are going to be tragically hindered because of what I think we're going to see the fallout from the destruction of livelihoods, unnecessarily shutting down businesses that could operate safely. They're not coming back. And then the investment or the incentive to invest in PA is going to be diminished. And that's going to have an impact on the finances for the state because there is no public sector without a private sector.
That is correct.
And when we've destroyed jobs and revenue creating enterprises, they don't come back overnight. And so that's going to be, I think, the ongoing challenge that we're going to see, not just in 2021, but for many years to come, that we will have set our economy in Pennsylvania back. And if Governor Wolf continues to have his way, it's going to be back even further than is absolutely necessary.
Yeah. And this is, you know, the approach for the pandemic, both with the economy and with personal health, is total harm minimization. You know, that there are trade-offs to everything. And insofar as a business, to the extent that they can be open safely, we need them to be open so that more of them survive.
That's absolutely true. And to the extent that, you know, we see more and more businesses going under, tragically, that's going to increase the pressure on those that remain. And they're going to have to pick up a lot of the burden, which is going to make it even more difficult going forward. So that's why this is critically important to stop the bleed and reverse it.
Try to arrest that negative dynamic
right,
so that we can pivot and get back into positive territory sometime soon, maybe 2021, maybe a little further down the line. But one way or the other, we are all going to be here. And we thank you for listening and being part of our radio family. We enjoy doing all of this for you. So, Matt, as we're coming down here to the last moments of the last program of 2020, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and what you do?
You bet. Go to thecommonwealthpartners.com or find us on Facebook at Commonwealth Partners.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people find you?
They can find us at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Wonderful. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Matt and Rebecca and me, thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks for listening all year long. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. Happy New Year. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
I do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of this Commonwealth. That sentence is the key component included in the oath of office administered to elected officials in Pennsylvania at the state, county, and municipal levels. No mention of allegiance to the governor of Pennsylvania. No mention of allegiance to the Pennsylvania General Assembly. No mention of allegiance to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. Allegiance is sworn to the constitutions of the United States and the Commonwealth. Generally speaking, laws are passed by the legislature with the consent of the governed, administered by the executive branch based upon that authority, and, when necessary, adjudicated by the courts based upon those same documents. But that has not been the case in 2020. As a power-crazed governor and a rogue state Supreme Court have run roughshod over the very constitutions they have sworn to uphold. As mentioned, no elected official in the Commonwealth has sworn allegiance to them. Thus it is that a majority of legislators, along with numerous county and municipal officials, have worked to restore constitutional balance. An example is Westmoreland County Sheriff James Elbert. He is no right-wing Republican ideologue. In fact, he was elected in 2019 as a Democrat and switched to the GOP last fall during the Democratic Party's lurch into abolish the police extremism. He, along with a number of county sheriffs across the state, are refusing to enforce Governor Tom Wolf's latest orders, singling out the restaurant industry, among others, for draconian shutdown measures. Albert has over 40 years of experience, having served as a law enforcement officer, a magisterial district judge, and now he is a county sheriff. Sheriff Albert told the Greensburg Tribune Review that experience has, quote, taught him there is a delicate balance between enforcing government mandates and at the same time protecting individual civil liberties, end quote. He says the current restrictions violate that balance. They do indeed. The Westmoreland County Sheriff is not alone in choosing to uphold his oath of constitutional fidelity over the pernicious whims of the governor and an activist state Supreme Court. Statewide, county sheriffs have been joined by district attorneys and municipal officials in refusing to enforce the governor's orders. More and more restaurants, gyms, and other restricted facilities are staying open in defiance of the state's unconstitutional edicts. There are some who will say those businesses are being selfish by putting profit ahead of the overarching public good of containing the spread of the virus. Yet there is no evidence to suggest closing such facilities will slow the spread. In fact, the governor and the Department of Health have violated the state's open records law and are fighting in court to prevent relevant data from being released. The Wolf administration has been less transparent than the Kremlin in providing statistics and records relative to its growing string of shutdown orders and restrictions. While refusing to release the data, state health officials cite an obscure 1955 disease prevention and control law and an administrative code dating back to 1929 to justify their mandates. But their interpretation of the law is overly broad, allowing them to assume powers never intended by the legislature. A far more accurate reading of legislative intent, not to mention current public sentiment, came in the form of the numerous laws passed by the General Assembly in an effort to loosen or end the governor's heavy-handed and, given the current spike of cases, ineffective mandates. A majority of lawmakers, often a bipartisan majority, have supported those bills. All have met with a gubernatorial veto. So a strong argument can be made that the will of the people has been expressed through their elected representatives, and that Governor Wolf himself has acted in an unconstitutional manner by violating the Fifth Amendment's takings clause as extended to the states in the 14th Amendment, by forcing businesses to close and taking the investment of the owner and the jobs of the employees without just compensation. As the struggle to end the governor's dictatorial powers continues, we can at least take heart that there are those elected officials who stand firm on their oaths of office and who have the courage to stand up for we the people when our constitutional rights have been infringed. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WWBE-FM and WFYY-FM in Selins Grove, along with WISL-AM in Shamokin, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.